will those big corporations that, you know, sit on 20-year-old code bases change in parts? Maybe I have seen parts of them change. Will they always be entirely modern? I doubt it. The bigger the ship, the harder it is to change the course, right?
Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to AB Testing Podcast. Brent's here. Say hi, Brent.
Hi.
Okay, our part's over. We have the wonderful Kat Obring here today on the podcast with us to share all kinds of wonderful testing knowledge and just sort of hang out with us and give Brent and I a chance to get to know you. So welcome, Kat. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Hello. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. First up, I feel extremely honored to be here. I mean, you guys have been running for 8 years.
No, we're the honored ones. Let's be clear on that.
I have been a tester / QA engineer / test architect / head of delivery for about just shy of 20 years now. So I worked across the space. I kind of fell into testing like many people do, right? I worked in customer support. My manager got a little bit fed up with me complaining about all the bugs I found. We were hiring for QA engineers in the company, so he kind of encouraged me to apply. That's how I got into it. And things went from there. I have had the luck, you can't see, I'm doing air quotes here, of mainly working in agile teams or teams that call themselves agile. You know, I think there is a little bit of inflation to that term and it's not getting any better the longer it runs. But generally speaking, I worked as a tester or QA engineer that worked within the team. I've never been outside of a team. I've never done the kind of write automation suites after the fact thing. And that has obviously shaped my views on testing quite significantly. And these days I run my own company and now I'm here.
I want to maybe at the end, we'll do some plugs. I want to talk a lot about your company and your newsletter and what you're doing. But I didn't realize till you told that story, because I've been watching you on LinkedIn for a while, how we have a lot of parallels in our paths. I fell my way into testing. I had a job doing tech support at a company that made music software. They also had me do testing. They didn't tell me what it was. I was the only tester. I figured it out. Eventually, I was a test architect, and I did more on the tools side and helping people test than I did testing. I also did a lot of testing, and people thought I was good at it, but I'm moderately okay at it. I just know a lot about it. And then I got into, you mentioned release engineering, and I did some of that too. It's when I began to do work on DevOps and pipelines and release engineering, I began to realize that I knew that I could have a lot more control over quality there. I also like, and I want to call out, there's been a bunch of articles this last few weeks on Agile is dead, long live Agile, because the term has kind of been, it means different things to different people. It's been abused. So I love the path, and I think Brent nodding his head, which our listeners can't see, so there's just a lot of similarities where we've come from. One thing that I know you have some opinions I want to talk about is, this is our modern testing principle number 7. We talk about we want to increase testing knowledge across the team. Not that specialists aren't necessarily needed, but they aren't the bottleneck. So can you talk a little bit like this idea that only a tester can do testing and whether that's true or not and sort of your experience there?
Yeah, you hear me sigh or you saw me sigh, right? I think this is one of the myths.
We completely understand every sigh that you might express.
Well,
this is a safe place. Go for it.
And it's nice to be in the company of like-minded people, really, because there is, you know, a lot of hubbub and noise around this. How can I put this right? I think the idea, so the main argument I see is that developers are focused on building stuff, and that kind of prevents them from critically thinking about whether what they build actually works, because they are so focused and they cannot, you know, biologically, this is nonsense. If we weren't capable of switching our model mindset, you know, the mental model that we operate from, then we would be, I don't know, we would all be talking all day long to our bus driver or chop wood or, you know, or whatever. We would not be able to do different things with different people, with different attitudes. So I don't really know where people, so you can hear, I feel quite strongly about this. Yeah, so no, I don't think that only testers can test. I think everybody in a team can test, and I think everybody should be encouraged to test. I think there is maybe a point to be made that you should not just build and test on your own. You always want to at least a second set of eyes, but that's just good practice for everything that you want to deliver to somebody else, right? Whether it is a text or a piece of software doesn't really matter. It is good practice to run it by somebody else and to play ideas off with somebody else and to get another, you know, thought process run over what you have done there. But that is a completely different topic, I think.
I think it's, I muted Brent because he was making a bunch of noise, but Brent, you unmute yourself if you want to jump in here. You hit on a couple things, and we have video on for the recording because it's good for us to read each other. And I made, like, my head was exploding. We're talking about this idea that we see written about a lot. And I'd like you to talk a little bit more about this. Can you expand a little bit more on your thoughts of the developers having a builder mindset and they can't test their own stuff? I totally agree with the point, like, work with a partner to help you test. And we had Brian Finster on like a month or two ago. Like, Brent and I have gone as far as to say, and I'm asking a horrible question here because we're horrible interviews, but I'll get there. Brent and I have gone as far to say that a lot of teams don't even need dedicated testers, which I still think is true. I don't think every team, I think, and Brent would say every team doesn't need it. I would say that most teams don't, but where the testers can really, really help, and where I don't want testers to go sit off in their silo and do a bunch of testing on their own. And I'm answering your question for you. I'm horrible at this job.
You're not answering the question.
I want the testers to accelerate the developer's ability to get quality software done.
And I see that Brent also wants to say something, so I'll just be brief and then give you a chance to talk as well. However,
thank you.
You know, I get into hot water about this all the time.
One second. I'm absolutely glad that our interviewing skills on this podcast have shown that we're absolutely flatlining, maybe even going down.
Well, maybe after this you will be, you know. Yeah. Anyways, so I get into hot water with this all the time, but I tend to agree that teams don't necessarily need dedicated testers. What teams need, though, is testing knowledge. I think teams need somebody on the team that is interested enough, you know, to advocate for quality, to learn stuff, to keep on top of newer developments, and so on and so forth, right? That doesn't need to be a tester. I don't care who it is. So that was answer that question.
I mean, we're going to be singing to the choir, I think, a good portion of this podcast. When I think of the builder mindset, there's one thing. I mean, we've come up with all kinds of analogies on this topic on the podcast over the years. But when I'm like, you know, if all of these people had, you know, had a fixed mindset that only succeeded, like one question, I'm like, okay, what percentage of them went through college? What percent of them passed college? Because how is that possible? I'm like, there's just so many things. How do they go home and live their life? The reality is everyone has to acquire and use a diversity of knowledge. So when everyone, just quite honestly, when people say, oh, they have a builder, I mean, they're using hyperbole. We could rephrase it and maybe have a different discussion around, okay, does that optimize? Like, I'm honestly really tired of, that's the only way to do it. Like, everyone on this call knows that that's complete and utter nonsense.
Yes.
But is it optimal? And even there, I would say no. Now, Alan quoted me earlier around that I would say it's always the case. It's not. There's certain places where if your shipping model is, you know, if you're doing a box product, you do want to have that extra risk control. If you have, if you're under government compliance, you do want to have a specialist under that, you know, in that arena. But the general stuff that we do on day to day, no, your investment, in my humble opinion, is better served by going and getting your staff, whatever their title is, trained on this stuff.
Exactly.
Then hiring somebody that then becomes a, it then encourages the codependency loop we've talked about a million times on here, where essentially people can't live without this person, but if that person goes, then the sky falls, right? And that's not a sustainable way to run a,
It's also not a good place to be in.
Right.
I mean, for both sides, for the team that depends on the tester, but also not on the tester. I can't count the amount of times I have come into teams to help them like modernize their testing approaches. And the first thing that the testers tell me is that either they sit twiddling their thumbs, because they're working agile, right? They twiddle their thumbs until the day before the sprint is over, and then they get all of the stories to test, and now they're super stressed. I'm like, yeah, sure, because that's not how you should be doing this, right?
I haven't had those days in 15 years. And I am so,
if you read
so
LinkedIn,
grateful,
they
so
exist.
Grateful they're gone.
Yeah, so Brent and I are quite a bit removed from that type of thing, but I do know it goes on, and I imagine in your business you see a lot of that. Even before Brent and I began to podcast, I think, and before we had principles kind of outlined, they're really delivery principles, but Brent came up with this when he was leading a test team. This mission statement was that we accelerate the achievement of shippable quality. And I know that you've also talked about how like testing, if it's well integrated, it will speed up delivery. Testing is not a bottleneck, it's an accelerant. And I've written about this a couple of times, but I know I want to hear your, I think we're going to nod our heads, but I want to hear it from you. Like, how do you view testing as speeding up the team versus slowing it down?
Well, the way I see it, there are multiple ways, right? It begins, and when we say testing speeds up the team, then we talk about a specific kind of testing done in a specific way. I want to be clear about this, right? We talk about testing that is done in a mainly automated fashion, and that is done in a way where tests are committed with the code through an automated pipeline, and they run automatically every time you want to merge your code. Right, so this is very specific, obviously. And the way this speeds you up is obviously any malfunction, any issue you detect at the time you're writing the code is, we all know this, right? It's easier to fix. It's cheaper to fix because your mind is still in the code. You don't have to remember what you did 3 weeks ago and work through the additions that three other people may have made in the meantime and so on and so forth. So that is the first and most obvious benefit here. But also, it means, obviously, that code will be written in a way that it is testable, which means later on, if you actually do release an issue into production, and you will be releasing issues into production because that stuff happens, then debugging is going to be much, much easier, much more straightforward. You have tests that may not have caught everything, but those tests can also, because now you are maybe months, years down the line, but you have tests that also can serve as documentation. So you have, a list of things that you expected your code to do, and you already know that is covered. So these are the main benefits, I would say, where things just speed you up, right? And obviously, you don't need to go through these cycles of a developer has done their work, they hand it over to a tester who then deploys it into an environment, maybe immediately, maybe a day later. Then they test the stuff, then they write their bug reports, they go back. So that process in itself usually takes a day or two, whereas a well-configured pipeline with well-written tests takes 15 minutes.
Again, people can't see the video, but Brent and I are doing happy dances because it is so refreshing to hear someone just like, this is makes so much sense, yet so many people don't get it. And so I'm really curious because I live in my little bubble here of edging towards continuous delivery, and my world is a lot like this. I imagine in your business, you encounter like folks across the board where this seems impossible, where they think the right thing to do is have a separate team of testers writing automation isolated from development. Like, what's that like for you in your business? How do you help teams see that
actually,
light?
And before, let me ask one follow-up to that question. Are you seeing a light at the end of the tunnel? Like, how much of your job is helping people transition? And are you seeing that person or that portion of your job actually trending either up, down, or staying the same?
So the main majority I have seen of this started really when I was working in a consultancy just before I opened my own business, right? So that was a consultancy that was in the business of digital transformation. There were the air quotes again that I will just call out because you can't see. And there it was, like you say, it was there I usually went in with a team of developers. So the way we worked in that consultancy was generally we bring in a whole team that then blends or becomes a blended team with developers and testers from the client. And we work with them together and we show them how we develop stuff using DevOps principles in a nutshell. Right? And quite often, part of my assignment was then work with a wider QA community in the client to teach them how to move towards these goals, how to educate their testers and train their testers up. Because quite often, if a tester has worked for 15 years on the job, but all they know is testing after the fact, then they will need a little bit of training to slot into a team like that. That was a lot of way. Do I see a light at the end of the tunnel? Yes and no. You know, I would say yes and no. I think by and large, it is like many things. Older habits don't necessarily change. They got just replaced by a new generation. And I think the newer generation of companies tend to work in more modern ways, in more DevOps-y ways, in more continuous delivery, continuous improvement ways. So yes, I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Will those big corporations that, you know, sit on 20-year-old code bases change in parts? Maybe I have seen parts of them change. Will they always be entirely, you know, modern? I doubt it. The bigger the ship, the harder it is to change the course, right? Did I answer all the questions?
Oh, you did.
Yeah. I heard the yes part. I got excited that it was followed by yes and no, and then I got a little
no,
sad.
But she's right. It's essentially until these other behemoths realize that the smaller, more agile companies are able to destroy their business. Well, it's essentially until the great software asteroid hits and knocks out these people with all of these ancient thought patterns, it's still going to persist.
I wonder what it takes for them to see the light. You know, I don't want to these days because I used to spend my time on Twitter, but I don't because for obvious reasons, Elon, thanks for wrecking my little home away from home. But so I browse LinkedIn and there's definitely a bubble there of, like, I live in a different bubble, and I don't know. And here's my dilemma. I would love your advice, Kat. Your free consulting advice because I'm cheap. I want to help. Brent and I started this podcast 10 years ago because we were seeing these changes happening, and we didn't want to invent anything. We wanted to talk about what we were seeing, and see if we could just talk about it and help people understand the changes that were coming, and how test could accelerate the team and how handoffs were slowing down delivery versus helping delivery. And I see like posts on LinkedIn that say only testers have the tester's mindset, and all teams, like they talk about the automation team and how they have a team of dozens of people writing Selenium all day, writing tests for the developers. What can I do? Like, I want to, like, should I ignore it and block those people so I can live in my echo chamber? Is there a way I can engage with them and help and try and help them? Or am I trying to be too much of a savior in that case? I should just stay out of the way. Like, what can I do to help bring some of the industry to where we are today? Or should I just butt out?
I was wondering if you would ask this question, funny enough. I don't know why I was thinking
and
about this earlier.
And I just made it up on the spot. So.
And I was thinking about this earlier because I definitely have incurred the wrath of some of the, you know, more old-fashioned camp occasionally, and they still have a lot of friends on Facebook. So I now have generally a couple of people who dissent with what I say on my posts in more or less engaging ways. Personally, I can't tell you what you should be doing, right? What I do personally is if I feel that the person is asking a genuine question, I'm quite happy to discuss. If I feel the person is asking a question just to start an argument with me, I will generally ignore it because I don't have time for that. And other than that, I think the best way way to spread knowledge is to make it available to people. Who wants to engage with it will engage with it. You know, who wants to descend will descend. And who just wants to go their way slightly blindfolded, they will do that as well. I can't make those decisions for other people, right? I just can offer what I have. Take it or leave it.
Without going into details, I think a lot of the dissent that comes to strong voices like yours, Kat, come out of fear.
Absolutely.
It's fear, digging their, they don't want their world to change because they're comfortable and they're kings and queens in their world. So the idea of that world changing is very, very frightening to those folks. But I think we need new ideas. And one thing while you were talking, I'm thinking I can do is rather than me bring my savior into, I'm going to teach you how to not be wrong. Like I'm going to go to having done this for a gazillion years and being old as hell, amplify the voices who are saying the good things and let people see a different way from more than just my angle. I think people are tired of hearing from me. We need to hear from people like you and others in the industry who are doing really good things. Just support.
Well, and I think she's right. We do need to broadcast the knowledge. Like I think you're right. It is fear. I think not only that, at some point in time, you have to conclude it's like the knowledge is out there, but these so-called experts, there seems to be a refusal to look at it. I'll just posit this. If you have been experienced in testing, and maybe I'm too far gone on this one, like I don't know how to take the other side of my hypothetical, but if you have read Accelerate, and if you have read Lean Startup, and if you have read Phoenix Project, how can you responsibly continue doing things the way you have?
Excellent question. I don't know. I mean, you know, and I fairly frequently have people question my posts on LinkedIn, for example, with, can you prove this with a study? And I'm like, yeah, I could, but really, should I show you how to Google this? Really? If you were interested in finding the facts about this, then you would have found the facts. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly.
Right. It's a straw man's argument. When say, can you prove this? Right? It's a straw man's argument. I am not trying to battle. I'm not playing testing King of the Hill. I don't want to be the high priest that everyone follows. What I'm trying to do is exactly what Kat's saying. It's, hey, here's a bunch of knowledge. If you want to learn the same knowledge I did, I just listed off, for example, three of the bajillion books on this. Go learn for yourself and make your own decisions. Really, like Alan invented this term a long time ago, test zombies. And I've been rather fond of it. And I'm just like, we have talked about, and for me, I'm sorry, Kat, like this is frustrating for me because I just like, we have talked about this for so many years. We have absolutely lived and observed that testers in this space really don't have a reason to fear. If they go in the right direction, they're actually even more valuable. I switched over to dev years ago. And we created a blending team. And guess what? My testers ended up being better developers than the dev did.
Of course.
Because because thinking about how do I make this work turns out to be a much better skill set or much harder skill set to sort of adapt and get in than it is on how to code. There's another sort of bubble that I think does.
Yes.
Code is just code. It's not magic.
Yes. And I think it is, on that note, I think it is really ironic that these days, the most kind of influential developer advocates you see, you know, on social media, talk a lot about how coding or how knowing how to write code really is not what gets you ahead as a developer. Learning to code is fairly easy. What you need to learn is how to think about a problem, how to define a problem, and how to define a solution to your problem. And then you need to learn how to talk to the people around you to understand what they really want and how what you are going to deliver is actually going to deliver value to a broad range of different stakeholders, right? So now we are suddenly in this space where developers claim the soft skills that testers have for years claimed they can only they can bring to the team. They need to be the translators between the people who write the code over there in the corner and the people who have the great ideas over there in the other corner, right? Sorry.
Yeah, and neither of which are the customer.
I'm going to unmute so I can clap. It's very relevant. Like right now, I am staring at a website talking about a presentation that Kat did in Prague last December called Delete That Test Column.
Yes, I think it was actually in September, not December, but yes.
Oh, okay.
Very nice. First trip to Prague, by the way. Lovely city.
I completely agree with that, but piggybacking on that, one of the things that I did is on my Agile board, the columns go release, then after that, which is typically done, on my board it says customer validate.
I like that.
And I expect actually the whoever owns that ticket to do that, whether they talk to the customer, whether they do something via telemetric means, I don't care. But it's not done until we have evidence of validation from the customer.
I really like that. Yeah.
And that is super powerful. Yeah. Because, well, anyway, you can guess it.
Yeah, no, I really like that. I mean, so another thing that I really like is that part of our definition of done in the teams I work with generally is at least some sort of monitoring is set up, right? Because talking to the customers is one way to validate, but there's of course also the other side where if you just get good information back from your production environment, you have good monitoring in place, then that gives you another data set that is also important to have, right? I totally agree. Done doesn't stop with it's now released, deployed. Again, also we don't need to talk about, you know, separating deploy from release. I know we're singing the same song in that, I'm sure.
We were talking earlier. It's like I was thinking, I watched the State of the Union in the US last night and watched the reactions from both sides. And there's a phenomenon where I think folks seek to, like, they're seeking their echo chambers. These are people that tout their critical thinking abilities, but they're not actually, like, going back to the books, they're not actually looking to see why would people think the other way. And I do this looking at the right wing in America. I try and figure out why do they feel the way they do, and it's usually not for good reasons, but I'm not going to go into that on this podcast. But I kind of see the same thing in the world of testing. People, they're comfortable in their echo chamber. They don't want to hear other ideas or consider them. And testers tout themselves on critical thinking. So I want to just put that out there. You can comment on that if you want. But like the testers I read on LinkedIn, they're very like, only we can test because we have the tester mindset, because we have attention to detail and we have critical thinking. Whether they do or not, I don't know.
Apparently not.
Also, I think for years, air quote, technical skills for a tester meant write code, but there's a lot more to that. Of course, writing, being able to write code to help, not necessarily to automate tests, but to help accelerate your testing is a really good idea. So anyway, I'm going to stop there. I want to talk about the critical thinking thing and get your opinions on that, and then talk about what technical skills do you think testers, people staying in testing, need to be successful?
Yeah, so on the critical thinking thing, right? I totally agree. I think it is highly ironic that the people who claim that they are the experts in critical thinking are also the people who are most closed to hearing any information outside of their echo chamber.
Yes!
And I think, you know, we all have a tendency to seek the company of like-minded people, you know, that is human nature, that is fine. But I think if you want to view yourself as somebody who operates on logic and critical thinking, then you need to allow a few uncomfortable facts into your life, whether you like them or not, right? So that is the one bit. There is the other bit, however, where, and this has been the case in my entire testing career, I always found it somewhat baffling that people think they can build a career purely on what is generally regarded as the softer skills that personally I would expect any professional in the field to have, because what do I do with a developer who can't ask questions? And that is the basis of critical thinking, right? What do I do with a developer who cannot communicate with people around them? Not very much. This may, and I doubt it, to be honest, this may have been a thing in the 80s, but at least not in the 20 years I have been in the industry. So I really don't understand this. And from there, going into what you already touched upon and on the technical side, if I find an issue with my application, then obviously having the technical knowledge to be able to isolate where this stems from and to have at least an idea what is going on under the hood will make it much, much easier to write it up in a way that will mean something to other people and allow them to, you know, prioritize the level of criticalness of the issue. Sorry, that was a horrible sentence. However, and also it just makes it easier to have conversations around this. Even if I don't become a super proficient coder or programmer or developer or however you want to call it, right? At least having a fundamental understanding of what we work with is something that I would expect every tester to have. So at least learn to read code, at least be proficient enough to help people with code reviews, right? You may not be able to spot every gnarly bit, but you can start there by questioning tests, by looking at tests, helping developers think about tests, help them learn what kind of tests you want to write. You know, go away from the happy path. Yes, we want happy path, but we also want edge cases. We want all sorts of things, right? So there are many ways, I think, into this without becoming the best coder on the planet. But yes, you need to at least be proficient enough to understand what you're working with.
I want to emphasize one point in there, because I said in a prediction episode back in December that the ability to read code is going to become more and more critical as AI begins to write code for you, both as developer, as a tester. Yeah. Reading code is so critical. And I'm far better reader at code than I am a writer. I'm a reasonable writer. But I actually have a study on this that I did for PNSQC like 20 years ago. I did a study of testers reviewing code and like I did extensive over a period of many months, probably not as, you know, as researchy as Nicole Forsgren or the PhDs, but I have a study on this. It makes a difference. The ability to read code and ask questions and apply critical thinking, even when you don't understand. Like, I have reviewed and found bugs in so much code that I could not have written myself just because I'm not afraid to ask questions. What does this do? I have found so many bugs, like saying, can you explain this to me? I don't quite get it. And they go, oh, you're absolutely right. That's broken.
I'm so pleased that you have a study on this. That's amazing.
Somewhere buried.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? I mean, Even if my knowledge about programming doesn't extend to understand extremely abstracted away functions, I can still spot badly named variables, for example. And in changing that, I will already have improved the quality of the code quite significantly, in fact. Right, I can spot if something is far too long and nested, and maybe should be broken down into lots of smaller functions.
I think what you said is fine. I'll be honest. When people come to me and say this, I'm like, look, think about the short term, think about the long term, and I kind of try to encourage people to set a 2 to 3 year goal. Literally to move, if they're in this position, move into dev. And it's quite literally that. It's identify, like, don't lose your existing skills, like the way you are able to understand variables, the way you are able to understand code, the way you're able to do critical thinking, right? Because that is the thing that is going to differentiate you from your peers in dev. And again, as we've already talked on the call, like the research is in my view, the research is kind of closed on that now, right? Mm-hmm. If we look at, here I'm mostly citing Accelerate, which did a very thorough research on this. But if you don't want to read the research, right, again, Lean Startup approaches this from a business point of view, and Phoenix Project approaches this from a DevOps point of view. Like, shift into dev and then help your team figure out how to do 10 deployments to production a day, right? And those two things will bring so much goodness along with it.
I agree. And I think in the mid to long term, right, again, this is something a lot of testers hate. I'm going to say it anyways. I think tester should really be a specialization within dev, like front end, back end, whatever you have, right? Because I think it is absolutely preposterous, actually, to have somebody on a team who only does one thing and none of the 50 million other things that also need doing, right? So even if you don't want to get too deep into code, at least learn how to work with a pipeline, learn how to configure a delivery pipeline, right? Learn some of that stuff if you don't know where to start.
Brent and I have I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go. I was done. I was just
Brent and I have a long-standing statement on here. Brent, what do we call a specialist?
A bottleneck.
Yep, exactly.
Specialists slow your delivery cycle down.
Yes.
But again, if you go through and you set a goal, okay, our company is going to do 10 releases to production a day. Okay, a day. Like, bottlenecks, like, hey, you know what? We can't get everything. We can't get anything out because they all have to be sent to Sally to do her test pass and validate. Right? I think about the Phoenix Project, and unfortunately, the anti-hero in that book, his name is Brent. Right? And Brent was the bottleneck. They couldn't get anything out because Brent was the only one that knew anything. And once they realized that, they started doing the test-coast strategy, which Alan over the years has absolutely, in my view, mastered. It's around taking that knowledge and we talked earlier around spreading the knowledge, but in some places, if you want to make these moves, you kind of have to force the knowledge out. Right? No, I'm not going to just live in the world where devs are specialists. It's time to broaden. You too are going to start also taking responsibility for the build pipeline. And then if you start creating that pattern, I found that actually the right things then start happening.
Yep.
Yep.
But I don't want to learn all of this. I just want to write code.
It's Brent because you're lazy and that's why you're obsolete.
Right.
You know, one thing I found, because Brian Finster talked about this, that the best way to highlight your problems in your delivery process or to try and do continuous delivery. And tell a quick story, then I want to get some more thoughts from Kat on this. But back when BDD was the thing, people got all excited about if we can write these given when then statements and then we'll write automation before with a snark. And it's great. But what I found, this story is going somewhere, believe me. What I found is that just having the discussion, talking about the behaviors of the software were 90% of the value. Talking about the behaviors before you wrote it, the automation was like a little frosting thing. It was fun, but just talking about the behaviors is really good. I found the same thing true with CD. Even if you don't want to do CD, even if it's not practical, ask a team to, hey, what would it take? What would you have to do in order to do continuous delivery? And start listing through it. Even if you have no need, there's no business need to do CD. There's no business need to deliver 20 times a day. I would challenge any team just to enumerate what they'd have to do in order to have continuous delivery, because it's going to highlight all of the problems that you should fix. So that was the cap there. So I got a couple of minutes left, but Kat, you do so much you have a newsletter, you're active on LinkedIn, you're giving talks, you have a business. Can you take a little time and kind of talk about, I want you to talk about your newsletter, your business. I want a little self promo here, not just because I'm trying to sell your business, although I'm sure it's very good, but you do a lot for the community. I want to make sure we get that highlighted here.
The business, to start with that, and by the way, I do have a little bit of space right now unexpectedly. Mainly, I do I do help teams to figure out how to modernize their test strategy, basically, right? So that is it in a nutshell. If you have a team and you're wondering why your testing goes awry, why there is lots of frictions between developers and testers, how you can speed that up. So that is kind of the area in which I operate. The newsletter came about, I think, because so I had been thinking about a newsletter for a while, but I couldn't really settle on anything that I thought would hold my interest enough. And I'm not going to embark on a weekly newsletter that bores me to death, because who else would want to read it, right? However, one of the questions I often, or one of the misconceptions I quite often ran into, was that improving quality in a team, especially in a team that is struggling in many ways, is this kind of massive thing that needs a 5-year commitment and a big 20-page plan and so on and so forth. And that is just not true. There are many, many, many small ways in which you can improve quality. And that is the way to go. I mean, I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you have, heard about atomic habits or tiny habits and that concept. And that, I think, is exactly mm-hmm. how you go about changing things, right? You change a small thing, you do it long enough until it becomes a habit, and then you change the next small thing and so on and so forth. And that works for individuals and it works for teams, because teams are groups of individuals, right? So that is the newsletter. And I really enjoy public speaking. Funny enough, I consider myself to be a fairly introverted person, and everybody who knows me in my normal life, I am, right? But I kind of enjoy public speaking, weirdly. And this all started when I was working in a consultancy, and that consultancy hired a public speaking trainer. Because if you are a consultant, you kind of have to be able to somewhat, you know, convincingly present something to clients. So you need some basic skills in public speaking, at least. And so this guy worked with me, and he encouraged me to apply to some conferences. I did. And much to my surprise, the first time I applied, I was accepted. I'm like, oh, okay, this is weird. So I went to New York City and spoke at a conference in New York City, which was great. However, it is a really good way I found to clear my own head, because presenting something, to explain it to an audience of people, is a really good way to get clarity on what you actually want to say. And I really enjoy having conversations that come out of this. So I always enjoy the question and answers much more than my presentation, because I already know what I'm saying. I've thought about this for quite a while at that point, right? But people have good questions. So I really like that.
Yeah, I agree completely. Brent and I are also introverts. We're INTPs on the Myers-Briggs, but it's exhaust. I also like public speaking. I like the questions afterwards. I always find it funny that nobody asks questions during the talk, but they all will line up to talk to you afterwards. But it's exhausting. I'm very tired afterwards, but also fulfilled. So I get it completely. James Clear is the author of Atomic Habits. He also has a nice newsletter. Big fan of that stuff. Yeah. You also have a book, I think it's fairly recent, Testing in DevOps.
Yes.
Which is out and available. I have a copy.
Yep, on Amazon. Indeed.
All kinds of cool stuff. But this is, I cannot, like, you can't see from the podcast because we don't do video, but how much Brent and I have nodded our heads and smiled and celebrated listening to you talk. It's just a complete breath of fresh air. Love what you're doing. If people aren't following you on LinkedIn or getting your newsletter or reading your stuff, they absolutely should. When's your next conference talk?
So the next one that is, I still have waiting on confirmation for a few that I have submitted for this year's, but the first one that is confirmed is, well, I have a very small appearance in Leeds. So I live in the north of England, and Leeds is fairly local to me. So there's a small meetup where I will be presenting. But the bigger one is a CTO CraftCon in London with, you know,
nice.
Big names like Charity Majors, with whom, by the way, I worked in my first job, which was quite funny because my first testing job was at a company called Linden Lab. I don't know if you remember Second Life, the big virtual world that was going to take
over. Oh, I do. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, so that was my first tech job. So,
now we have a whole other podcast. I once did a review conversation entirely in Second Life.
Well, I did my interview for that job in Second Life, which was quite bizarre. Of course. And that was actually before Second Life had voice. So I did an interview for a job in text chat.
If you hated it, you probably wouldn't like working there. So that was
anyway. CTO CraftCon 8th and 9th of March, May in London. If you want to come see me.
Got it. So exciting. All that. I thought of a question in the middle of my just complete admiration for you, but thank you so much for being here with us. Absolutely a pleasure. Absolutely exciting. Love what you're saying. Everyone should go check out everything you're doing.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure talking to you. We enjoyed this.
It was a joy. Thank you, Kev.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time.